Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for tuning in today. And as always, I want to remind the listener that just because you hear of certain tax rules, tax strategies, etc., and perhaps you hear of some opportunities for investors to invest in real estate private partnership syndications, that this content is simply for your edification, and I'm not suggesting you run off and go try to execute a strategy or an investment opportunity until you have confirmed with your existing advisors that the opportunities, the rules, the strategies, etc., that you're hearing are applicable to your specific facts and circumstances. So go talk to your lawyer, your CPA, your real estate mentor, your investment advisor, whoever those parties are that are already familiar with your facts and circumstances. And if you don't have any of the above that understand these concepts, feel free to go to our website at beaplannershow.com, and towards the just below the title bar on that homepage, towards the right, you'll see a forms link. And if you will go to that page and complete at least the first of four steps, which is the client profile form, that'll give us enough information where you can then click the call link at that same homepage and schedule a call. And we'll be happy to spend a few minutes with you to confirm if or how we might be able to help you with meeting your objectives in terms of creating retirement wealth in the most tax-efficient manner possible. As we often do each week, we use the news cycle to illustrate certain tax or real estate concepts, strategies, etc., and it's always interesting to see what has happened the last few days or last month, for that matter. I try to, get into the certain news cycles early on, but sometimes things don't pop up or I don't see them or recognize them, recognize the point that I might be able to illustrate until much later. And so occasionally you will see some references. I do date the articles that are on that site or on that page of our site. It's on the news page under resources. If you look at the top navigational links, you'll see resources, and then if you click resources, you'll have a drop down, and there is the news. And in some cases, it's probably easy to follow along with me if you have access to a desktop or even on your phone. All of these news organizations these days have responsive, quote unquote, websites where they render the browser display to fit the content, but it still doesn't make old eyes like mine all that enjoyable to read news articles on my cell phone. But in any event, you can always circle back. I got articles out here from, I don't know, two or three years ago, and I just keep moving them into an archive section that you can find down at the bottom. And it's, I'll tell you, since we started doing this, it's interesting how helpful it is to go back and take a look at what an issue consisted of or what the national debt was back at a certain point in time, and you know, we'll take a look at that today at some point. I still need to put a link up for the current version of that article, which is kept updated out on foxbusiness.com. Is one of the best places to keep up with the change, since you can see, well, if you save off the links like I do, you can see what it was, a week ago. I think the current view is the 24th, so earlier this week. What is that? I'm 12 hours ahead of you, so you'll have to forgive me. I'm on the 26th. Okay, well, it is the early this week, but it's not today for the Central Time Zone. It's yesterday, so that would be Wednesday, I suppose. So it's pretty much up to the date, and if I look at the current level is $34 trillion, $582,242,753.07. Although, as long as it took me to say that, it's gone up at least another probably $50,000. I didn't have the number in my head, but in any event, let's see, I was just pulling up last week, and it was $34,591,000,000. So let's see here, I misplaced the tab for what let's see, here it is, I believe. No, that's not it either. I've got too many Fox Business. Here we are. It's, let's see, $34,581,000,000 as of 4/24. Well, that doesn't make sense. It's actually gone down, according to what I'm looking at. I think this may be a page that did not get updated on Fox. They've got the titling that's updated, but I can assure you that the national debt has gone up another 6 to 8, probably 8.5 billion with the current interest rates each day of the week is what, if I recall, it's currently tracking. And, you know, for this year, this will be the first year in the history of the U.S. borrowing where our interest expense on the debt, which is currently at $813,904,000,000, so almost $814 billion, will exceed the defense budget. At this moment, well, it's defense slash war, so it's the defense budget plus the cost of wars, which, as you know, is consistently in an upward trajectory with what we currently have going on with Ukraine and Israel, and most likely, I'm betting that before November of this year, we're going to see some action with China in Taiwan. Maybe even the Philippines. You know, China's encroached into their fishing waters with their fake islands in the South China Sea. And I don't know. I'm not sure. This administration likes to talk tough, but I don't see the Chinese shaking in their boots at all. And in fact, they've only increased the number of military flights they're flying buzzing around Taiwan, and with the Philippines, they're blasting the Philippines fishermen with water cannons, etc. So there's a lot that could happen over on this side of the world before much longer. Speaking of the current budget quagmire that we're in, and we're not going anywhere up fast, we're going down in terms of being above the watermark, as it were. The biggest single budget issue or item in our annual fiscal budget is Medicare and Medicaid, currently at almost $1.8 trillion. Social Security is second in line, $1.4 trillion, and defense spending is third, just barely, $883 billion. And then interest on the debt's number four at almost $814 billion. By the year 2034, if you believe CBO's revised 10-year budget forecast, because the CBO is the Congressional Budget Office, they're the agency that theoretically calls the balls and strikes on legislation. They study each proposed legislative bill to determine is it going to, or how or if it's going to be paid for. And of course, it's not if, because we know that answer. It won't be, because Congress has a habit of not paying for much real time. In fact, I was just reading an update on the Ukraine aid that we've provided, and every dollar of the Ukraine aid that we have provided to date has been borrowed. And, you know, it's interesting, I guess, the presumptive GOP nominee, Mr. Trump, had suggested recently, or I guess he was lamenting the fact that here we're giving all this money to Ukraine, and none of it has been in the form of a loan that would be repaid. And so, wouldn't you know it, this latest $95 billion tranche that Congress just passed, and of course Biden was waiting with pen in hand to sign it. Apparently, Biden made sure that a big chunk of it was in the form of a loan. However, he can unilaterally, as president, forgive it in 2 years. And so I'm just guessing that's probably the plan, but at least he can, on the campaign trail, he can trumpet the fact that, oh yes, you know, we're doing a loan now with Ukraine. They'll have to pay us back. But I think, you know, he doesn't quite understand the intellect of the American taxpayer. And let's hope that intellect is evidenced come November. Maybe not. I don't know. I guess it depends on which side of the fence you're on there. But in any event, but for the first time, our interest expense will pass defense spending. And then again, if you believe CBO, by 2034, interest will be the largest item in our annual fiscal budget. And between now and 2034, the really stark reality is that our deficits will be at least $2 trillion each and every year. I believe it trickles up to $3 trillion in one of the years here in the next 4 or 5 years. But it's going to average about $2 trillion a year. And I know that's got to come as a shock to most of you folks that listen to Mr. Biden opine on occasion. He keeps repeating, even just very recently, that he's cut the budget or cut the deficit by $1.7 trillion with, I believe it was the IRA Act, the Inflation Reduction Act, a year ago or 2 years ago. And I think what he's referring to, because this is classic gobbledygook doublespeak that goes on in Washington, they think differently once you get inside the city limits, I suppose, inside the beltway, as they call it. And they tend to count savings that they project out as far as 10 years in the future from the legislation that we passed today. And of course, the problem is it never materializes, because if we had any savings at all from the programs that were being enacted, they will be quickly gobbled up with new spending. And so we never really quite get there to the point where we actually cut any kind of spending. And I tell you, the Congress is going to have a very painful realization when in 2028, 29, or 30 time frame, we will no longer have enough discretionary spending remaining in the tax collections, the budget, to cover 100% of the interest on the public debt, the debt that we've borrowed from assorted, actually borrowed it from intergovernment agencies, we've borrowed it from U.S. Citizens, investors, we've borrowed from foreign sovereign debt funds, various countries around the world. And at some point in that time frame I indicated, 2029 to 30, maybe 28, depending on how long the interest rates stay up, because every time that a T-bill or treasury bond matures, which is constantly, when we borrow new debt to replace that, we're getting hit with higher rates. Investors are demanding more due to inflations. It all kind of is part of the federal funds connective tissue. You know, every time the Fed raises interest rates, well, everything else falls into line, including treasury or T-bill auctions, mortgage rates, etc. And so the longer that the rate stays up at the current level, which is a lot higher than what the majority of our bonds that are coming due were sold at, the interest rate, it pushes us up a little bit closer to the inevitable point that we are not able to pay 100% on the debt without chopping in other areas. I suspect that what would happen, it's like what happens now anytime we get close to a sequestration event, with, you know, the Congress being unable to agree, which happens a lot lately in the budgetary context, then they have these tripwires that threaten to cut spending. And that's essentially, I believe, what will happen out in 2029 and 30 if we don't handle the problem and address the problem sooner. It's much akin to what's going to happen with Social Security. I believe it's 2034 that the Social Security Trust Fund is empty, out of money, and the current law provides that there will be an across-the-board cut that translates to somewhere between a 23 to 25% cut in the Social Security benefits that are currently being paid out. And that's assuming something doesn't happen sooner to address that issue. Let's do this. I ran past our scheduled break. Let's go ahead and take that break, and I will be back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA. People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in a little forgiving and love along the way. You better get to know.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195. 713-581-0195. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. Nathan@npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I wanna be. Big dreams and fantasies, and there are many just like me
with big dreams and fantasies.
Okay, welcome back to more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I just want to mention something I probably should have said on the first segment, that I get questions often off the air about, well, what do you guys do? You're always talking about these real estate private partnership syndications, and I guess some people think that means that we must sell them. We don't sell them, unlike some of the investor platforms that you will hear on this very radio station, which they operate under a membership model. You have to pay $20,000 to $25,000 membership fee to be able to invest in the partnerships that they allow on their platform. And in some cases, those may be exclusive to the investor platform, and that, I guess, in a way could create value that other platforms that don't have exclusivity, meaning that one of the platforms here in town that I've talked about not positively in the past, they don't have exclusivity. In spite of them making representations to that effect, I guess convince people to part with their money for a membership, any of the syndicators or sponsors, et cetera, that you see make a presentation at that organization, and you can go, most of the real estate mentor investor platforms have a case study night once a month or so, or other free events, and so you could go and listen and connect with one of the syndicators offline, and you would find out very quickly. They will readily, happily consider you as a possible investor, assuming you meet the criteria, the SEC criteria for the specific investment, because the investments are offered under one of two statutes under the crowdfunding, or two acts, I guess, under the crowdfunding statute, in which case you either have to be a sophisticated, non-accredited investor, or in the case of the 506C section, you've got to be accredited, which at the moment means that you have to have $1 million in net worth, not counting or not including your residence. And that may change. The SEC staff recently offered for consideration some inflation-adjusted criteria. We've got that out on our videos page at the BAPlannerShow.com. Again, click the resources tab at the top right, and then select the videos navigational link at that point, and you'll see that video. It's, I don't know, four or five videos down the page, but the gist of it is that the current $1 million threshold would be raised to $3 million. And the income requirement, which you can qualify based on either the net worth threshold or your annual income. And the current levels of income are $200,000 if you're single, or if you're qualifying as a single party, and the $300,000 threshold is required if you're qualifying as a married couple. And let's see, I was going to suggest that the entire definition of accredited resulted from the Dodd-Frank Act that passed a while ago now. It's hard to believe. I don't even remember how long it's been since both of those folks, so Chris Dodd and I forget Barney Frank was the House member. Dodd was the senator, but boy, it's hard to believe how far it's gone, but or how far long it's been. But in any event, the current or the current thresholds on income are $200,000 and $300,000. Again, individual versus joint, those would go up significantly. The $200,000 level would go to $607,000. The joint would go from $300,000 to $911,000. And you need to understand that SEC staff reviews don't have really a lot of bearing. They're not formal proposals, and they're not recommended changes. They are offered for consideration, is I guess the best way to explain it. And the SEC commissioners may or may not consider. And this is not the first time the accredited definition has been contemplated or considered. It wasn't two or three years ago that it was also looking to potentially be updated, and didn't occur. So no need to panic, but if you are thinking about perhaps investing in this asset class, you know, the private partnership syndications, specifically multifamily apartments is what we tend to work with, although there are assorted genres of real estate that are marketed in this fashion. And you can go to two of my favorite platforms are RealtyMogul.com, and then CrowdStreet is a second. And then there's various and assorted syndicators that are, you know, they have the ability for you to contact them directly. You don't go through a platform per se. And, you know, there's various and assorted pathways to get to these transactions. And you really no longer need to join the old school investor slash mentor platforms. It's kind of akin to when you buy your plane tickets these days, you don't typically call a travel agent. You know, you get online, you go to assorted websites, you know, Google Flights is the best I've seen, and you do your research, and then you click the link in Google to take you directly to the carrier's website on that itinerary, and you proceed with booking your flight. It's an amazing service. It's like everything else. Well, not everything, but a lot of things Google does. You would happily pay for it, but they give it to you for free. They don't make a penny off, at least not from us, the buyer. I don't know about what United or Delta or who else might be paying them, but it's a wonderful service. And, yes, I'm sure they're cataloging all of our data. Get over it. The whole world has cataloged your data, whether you realize it or not. And just be grateful you've got a way to turn what used to be, at least for me, it used to be like taking an SAT exam every time I would sit down to book my flight here overseas, turns it into a pop quiz. It's just amazing how they've, you know, used the technology to do the heavy lifting for us. But in any event, if we go back to the news page, I keep getting diverted. Just a couple of quick articles, and I just mentioned this first one. Oracle is going to move their headquarters to Nashville. I had not heard they were thinking of doing that, and I'm not sure if there were plans in the works and I just missed them. But, you know, their headquarters, some of you may be thinking they're in Silicon Valley because that's where they were forever, but you've forgotten they moved to Austin 4 years ago. And it's not clear exactly what the Austin presence will turn into or how it would be impacted or what the timeline of any move they're contemplating might be. But there's a couple things about the Nashville move that portend of a future that, you know, Oracle's a smart company, and I guess they're reading the tea leaves. And to think that, one, they moved out of Silicon Valley to Austin, which, you know, Austin is or has become a tech hub of sorts. I mean, it's not Silicon Valley, but Google has huge operation there. Apple has one of their two headquarters there. And so for Oracle, I think Facebook has a second headquarters in Austin as well. But the reason Oracle cites, first sentence of the article, this is on biznow.com, it's a real estate news gatherer, is to move its headquarters to be closer to the center of the healthcare industry. And I guess two surprises there. I wasn't totally aware. I mean, I knew Nashville had a lot of healthcare, but I didn't realize that was thought of as the heart or the center of the healthcare industry. And then secondly, Nashville is a major multifamily player in terms of the development that's going on there. And I'm not sure, I haven't noticed lately what its absorption is, but I tell you what, this will help Nashville likely as much or even more than it's going to hurt Austin. I mean, Austin has already got a difficult office market, as is mentioned in this article. Vacancy in their office market is at 23.1%, up a full percentage point from the previous quarter. Net office absorption is 354,000 square feet. That's negative. And so this is, while it's great news for Nashville, I tell you, this is going to hurt Texas, hurt Austin. And I don't know how many empty apartments will be added to the stack as well. And, you know, Austin definitely has an absorption issue on that front. But anyway, it's as Larry Ellison, the founder, said in this article, he said, the center of the industry we're most concerned about is what he's identifying Nashville as, the healthcare industry. And, you know, it's telling. I'm sure it won't be the last big tech outfit to make that determination and possibly make that move. Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our last break, and we'll come back, and we will discuss a few more of these articles. We'll be right back momentarily with more of the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. Grindstones and rhinestones are made of my life. But I shine like a diamond through sacrifice. I was gonna be rich no matter how much it cost. And I was gonna win no matter how much I lost. But I hope that will tell me, well done, my child. You've won your reward through your sacrifice. Your sacrifice.
Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com for the Be a Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-581-0195, 713-581-0195, or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com, Nathan at npross.com.
Have you recently joined a real estate mentor program? BeAPlanner.com shows how real estate investments combined with proactive tax planning can generate significant wealth. However, syndication terms for private real estate partnerships are complicated. They help you assess the benefits of ownership from A acquisition to E exit. A planner wants to know what they are signing up for. BeAPlanner.com with CPA Nathan Ross. BeAPlanner.com.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough to take control.
Okay, welcome back to the final segment of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And moving on down our article list at BeAPlannerShow.com on the resources link at the top, sublinks, videos, and news. You want to select news. And an article about, from today, Multi-Housing News has an article about Hines, Houston-based developer. It used to be simply office back in the day when the founder, Gerald Hines, was running the company, and I used to office in a Gerald Hines, one of his probably better known buildings, the Penzel Place there downtown Houston. And quality individual, quality company, and absolute top quality projects that they developed. And his son is, I think, carrying the mantle very well and has steered them not just in the office sector, but they're into build-to-rent developments all across the country. I saw they were doing something with the Tampa Bay Marlins baseball. I believe it was the baseball team on a stadium of some sort or some big project. They're all over, and it's quite, again, it's a real tribute to the city of Houston that a company like that has stayed put and doing great work around the country. The project that they're talking about here, and as you may be aware, there is a move around the country to convert around the country and in Houston, Texas, believe it or not, converting office space to Class A residential apartments. And this is a 217,000 square foot office building in Salt Lake City is being converted into a 217 unit community to be named Seropph, Seroph. The 25-story tower is scheduled for delivery in the fall of 2025. And I mentioned the office-to-residential conversion is going on in Houston as well. And I'm not sure what might be downtown already. I don't know that I've noticed anything, but it could have happened, and maybe I slept through it. But I know this, and this is far more intriguing to me, is the former BP tower there on Eldridge Parkway is currently in the midst of a conversion. And the first property I'm aware of in Houston that's happened outside, let's say, Loop 610, far outside, right, in the energy corridor. And supposedly the article that I read in the Houston Business Journal, I don't know, 6 months ago when it was announced, indicated that the rents for that that property would be somewhere in the same range as a new Camden. Camden REIT is a top Class A+ developer of the standard four-story apartment building that we find so common around the Houston. And so it sounds like it'll be innovative. And I don't know, the older I get, the concept of being in a high rise, I've mentioned to several of my clients that I'm currently looking here overseas for a condo downtown Bangkok. We live just outside the city limits in a traditional single family home. And the older I get, I would like to go back to the high-rise world that I once experienced, where I had a Starbucks and a 7-Eleven in the ground floor. And, as an old guy, I'm all about convenience now. I don't want to get in a car and drive if I don't have to. And, what I'm looking for is what I had once before, and it's there. There's more than a few opportunities, and the beauty of it is you can still rent it. Just like in Houston, you can rent for a lot less than you can buy. And I tell you, it's striking how some of the condo projects in Houston, I was looking around on horror.com recently, trying to compare. We're currently selling some of my real estate in San Antonio, some condos, and we're doing far above